You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, our march around the world, wrapping up tonight, this 26th day of March, year of our Lord, 2022, and over the course of nearly two decades, we have had any number of marvelous guests on, but the one who is really a standout to me, one of our go-to guys is Nick Griffin, and he is just an incredible commentator and political analyst, and he can show us the way, to high elected office. Former member of European Parliament, he joins us tonight from Great Britain. Nick, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, James, and thank you very much for that lovely intro.
Well, you're very welcome, and it's much deserved. You were on the first hour of the first show of this year. You were our first guest of the year, and that meant a lot to me. It was actually on January 1st, no less. And, well, Nick, quite a lot's happened since then, has it not? How do you assess the first 3 months of this year?
Well, what a 3 months it's been. I remember it's only a few months ago now I was saying to people that we will probably not in our lifetime see anything more dramatic, anything to match the global elite's COVID scandemic lockdown. And then bang, all of a sudden we've got something which is an even bigger story and is perilously close to the...
They never disappoint, do they?
They never disappoint. So we're perilously close to the end of the world. But I think actually that with a little bit of luck and God willing, we are right now in the midst of the final collapse of the thing which has dominated not just the world, actually, but also has dominated and ruined America for the American people. We're seeing the end of what Putin quite rightly has called the Empire of Lies.
Well, I think that Russia and China have both, you know, joined forces, and hopefully they can drive a stake through the heart of that particular vampire.
Well, I will agree with Nick, and I said this last week. I am in now my 41st year of life. Not too long, but not exactly young either. And this is, I believe, the most important event of my life, what's going on here. At least it certainly has the potential to be.
Well, the first war on European soil since 1945.
Well, I've got to say no.
Go ahead. I've got to say no to that. Because the first war on European soil since 1945 was waged by the NATO war criminals, the Americans and the British particularly, in Serbia. And that was a monstrous war.
Balkans. Well, Balkans is barely Europe, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, actually, no. I would say it. Well, you know, we had Tom Sunich on a couple of weeks ago. Oh, I have a question for Nick about the Balkans in a moment. But first, yes, let's talk about the situation in Russia. We had last week, Nick, on this program from Moscow, live from Moscow, Charles Balsman, who is an American by birth, but living in Russia now, and of course the editor-in-chief of RussiaInsider.com. And, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of, and we've given it a good treatment over the last month and change, but your opinion on why the global elite, why the criminally corrupt Western nations and their media apparatus, the system, is against Russia so much?
Well, there's a combination of things. There is a degree of opportunism in that with their COVID lockdown, they were obviously quite deliberately inflicting forthcoming immense pain on ordinary people, but they were going to get the blame for that. You know, they're going to get the blame for rampant inflation, for fuel poverty, with a combination of the COVID lockdown and, of course, their insane war on carbon. All of these chickens were about to come home to roost, and they'd have got the blame for the whole lot. Now, all of a sudden, they can say, oh, it's all Putin's fault. So that's it's a very convenient war for them. But, of course, it goes much deeper than that. There's a number of things. There's the military-industrial complex. Wars, and especially the rumours of war, are particularly profitable for very powerful people who've got the political elite in their pockets. And I think that the glory times of Big Pharma for 2 years, you know, they can only keep that going for so long. So now this is another parallel part of this very, very corrupt political stroke big business scam operation. So there's money. Of course, there's the very deep-seated ancient tribal hatred of the Talmudists for not just white Christian civilization in general, but Russia in particular. So I remember a Woody Allen joke many, many years ago. He was talking about something like his great-great-grandmother was too busy being raped by Cossacks to do anything else. You know, and that mentality filters through those people to this very day. And so any opportunity to get white Russians killing other white Slavs, especially, and vice versa, is, you know, it's all good by them. So you put all those things together, and then above all, you've got the very clear position of the American neocons, the Project for the American Century, and so on, when they said, more than 20 years ago now, that they will not countenance any power or combination of powers developing to the position where they can challenge the hegemony of the USA, or rather the people ruining the USA, either militarily or economically. And obviously, they're facing that now, so they're going to war to try and stop it. In particular, they're at war. A key part of their war aim, ironically, both sides, both big sides, not Ukraine, the big sides, the Russians on one side and the Anglo-Zionist elite on the other, they both actually almost already succeeded in their war aims. The key war aim of Russia was to ensure that Ukraine remains neutral and not part of NATO, and that's now a done deal. And the key war aim of the people ruining the United States was to decisively break Germany away from Russia, to break the pipeline link, and thereby to try to ensure that the Chinese-Russian One Belt, One Road system doesn't extend all the way to Lisbon. So both sides thus far have gained, and it's, as usual, the poor bloody infantry and the ordinary people who get it in the neck as a result.
Well, I think you nailed it, but let me just say this. They've managed the wild card in that deck. You got the Talmudic Anglo-Western European group and Russia, but you've got China, and now China and Russia have been driven into one another's arms, and that seems, the Chinese are not bedeviled with Jewish power and influence like we are over here, and I that's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
We're going to take our first break of the hour. Nick Griffin joining us live from Great Britain during our march around the world. It all wraps up tonight with one of my very favorite guests. So glad to have him back on, Nick Griffin, the former member of European Parliament. Stay tuned.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789, or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
I want to share a couple of anecdotal stories with Nick Griffin and get his response to them. Nick, number one, I was out of town earlier this week and spending time with a friend who just returned from working for a year in Russia. He's an American who was teaching abroad, and he had to leave Russia once Visa and MasterCard stopped doing business there because that was how he was financing it. But anyway, I was talking to him, and he was actually living in Siberia and teaching in Siberia, far to the east of Moscow. And he said it was in a city of about 800,000 people. And I didn't know that they had cities that big that far to the east. But he said that in that city, there is one or two murders every other year. And I asked him about the situation and the people. And he said the people are so beautiful and they're so polite and everything is orderly and it's homogenous. And it's a high-trust society.
It's a white society.
And I asked him his thoughts on, you know, of course, the situation, let's call it. And he said, hey, let's just get down to it. The world hates Russia, the world. Hates Russia because it's a Christian nation and they're fighting for God. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would do. I mean, I would say it's not the world hates Russia. It's actually a very small part of the world. So it's the Five Eyes. It's the Anglo-Zionist.
Very influential group.
It's a very important part.
Very influential group.
Yeah, indeed so. And of course, it's also the U.S. puppet governments in the European bloc. But that's it. Outside of that, before the break, we were thinking in terms of, you know, China's sided with Russia. And actually, if you think back just 3 weeks ago, we were being told, oh, Putin's completely isolated. Even the Chinese are saying they're not going to help. They're so appalled. And now the Chinese have made it very, very clear that they're going to take no orders from the United States or Britain. They're going to do exactly what they want. And what they want is to work very closely with Russia and reject sanctions. But it's not just them. It's also India, which is really more remarkable. The Indians, just a few days ago, the British government was saying, well, we're going to send our foreign minister over to lecture you because you've got to impose these sanctions. And the Indians simply turned around and said, don't even bother to send someone. We're not interested in that. We're carrying on trading with Russia. In fact, we just signed a contract for a vast amount of oil at a very cheap, good price for us. So we're going ahead with that. It's not just them. It's Brazil and much of South America. There's not one nation in the whole of Africa which has imposed sanctions. There's, I think, in Asia, there's only South Korea, Singapore, and Taiwan, all of which, of course, are simply Washington puppet states. And that's it. You've even got Turkey, which is the second biggest army in NATO, refusing to impose sanctions. And most remarkable of all, Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, which is the very basis of the petrodollar, which is the financial basis of the power of Washington and Wall Street, and is what funds the American military. Even they and the Gulf states have said, nope, we're not interested. We're not going along with this. So the Anglo-Zionist world hates Russia. everybody else is either just happy to trade with Russia or is at present, I think, looking at this and seeing, well, this is where those Western imperialists who screwed us over for many, you know, decades or centuries, this is where they get their comeuppance.
Well, that's also, Nick, you know, it's the petrodollar that you mentioned, you know, as the world's reserve currency. That was one of Roosevelt's great sleight of hand tricks after World War II, is mm-hmm. to knock it out of Britain with the pound and to have the dollar take its place. And it is, like you said, the Anglosphere, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States, those places, plus Western Europe and some of Eastern Europe, like you said, the Anglo-Talmudic alliance, basically. And I think they're going to be outnumbered in this situation, and they're liable to lose that the magic that comes from having the world's reserve currency be your currency, particularly. And, of course, Biden is a very unimpressive figure. He's the first American president to break wind in the presence of the English monarch. But see, he's just
Keith. Enough with the comedy act. We got to get serious here.
Well, it's the truth. But see, and the thing about Russia, the Jews have always had the thing about Russia. I guess it goes back to pogroms in the 19th century or something, or at least a fable that they have about that. But yeah. The irony was they hated Tsarist Russia and they hate post-Soviet Russia, but they love the Soviet Union. Why?
Yeah.
Because the Soviet Union was run by Jewish Bolsheviks.
Well, I got to actually, another thing that was sent to me by a friend this week, a listener, well, he's more than a listener, he's a supporter, he's a dear friend in Nashville, but he saw a story, Nick, where one of the participants who was indicted for having attended Donald Trump's rally on January the 6th with regards to voter fraud, has applied for political asylum, and he was granted it by Belarus. So now you have Americans who supported the president applying for political asylum in Belarus, whereas, man, haven't times changed since the Cold War?
It's quite stunning, isn't it? It really is. And I think the biggest change, of course, is it's come back for a moment to the – it's not just the petrodollar, actually. That's the mechanism of the American financial and therefore military dominance of the world in some ways. But there's also bigger than that. There's two key things. There's the fact that the dollar has been the global reserve currency, and everything that Biden and the US elite have done in the last couple of months has in fact worked to undermine that. You know, they've simply said, well, all the money that Russia had in its reserves, we confiscated them. Now, you might wonder, we had to wonder why Russia left those reserves there where they could be confiscated in the first place. And I think it's either the consequence of there being a real, or there was, a very significant pro-Western, pro-NATO fifth column within the upper echelons of sections of the Russian establishment. So either it's basically an act of folly or treason by them, or perhaps it was a deliberate Russian trap. I'm not sure. Because basically what the Russians are losing in confiscations just about is balanced by what various Western investors stand to lose in Russia. So the Russians come out of it, if both sides seize, then the Russians come out of it basically equal. But all the rest of the world will be looking at this, what's happened, and thinking, well, if we invest in Russian, in American debt, at any point when the people running America decide they don't like us and they want to interfere in some way with what we're doing, at any point they'll simply pull the plug and steal our money. Now, why would anyone put their money into American debt when that's the case? And then,
well, see,
sort of
we've
parallel
talked about lawfare before. Lawfare is like
yes.
using the legal process as warfare. Well, we
yes, indeed.
The economy as warfare, and
yep.
I don't think it's going to work.
It's not going to work. And then the other factor, the West, certainly in Britain, I imagine it's the same in the States there, the controlled media are crowing every day about there's been another bunch of Russian oligarchs or Jewish Russian oligarchs have been sanctioned and they've lost their super yachts and their property in New York or London or whatever. And they're crowing how great this is. But again, that's what they've done there. They've driven a coach and horses right over property rights were actually one of the fundamentals of a normally functioning Western economy. And again, they've told the entire world, every oil magnate, everyone with any money in the world, they've told them that if you invest in the West, we can at any point we want simply take it all away from you. So it's a catastrophically important lesson that they've taught the entire world, that you cannot any longer trust the Anglosphere to look after your money, which means that they will simply put their money somewhere else. And when you have the Russians and the Chinese on the verge now of having a fully functioning alternative to the dollar and the whole Western capitalist system, to be pushing people to use that alternative is actually it's insanity. And yes, you can think or try to look for ways in which they're doing this because they want to reset the world and make us all poor. But I think is on top of that, there's also just grotesque incompetence, stupidity and arrogance on behalf of our elites. These people are grotesquely incompetent and they're giving away control of their own world. It's a sort of economic and financial suicide by Russia.
It's hubris, and also an example of that old saying, give them enough rope and they'll hang themselves. That's what
they're right
doing.
There. Yeah.
Well, Nick, let me ask you this then, and we only have seconds remaining before the next break. Our guest last week said in a couple of more weeks, Zelensky, the puppet, will no longer be president of the Ukraine. Do you agree? Yes or no? We got to take a break.
He'll be president of the Ukraine in exile.
Ah, very interesting. Very interesting. Well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we will transition ever so slightly.
Be the prisoner of Zenda.
The former member of European Parliament, Nick Griffin, as our march around the world continues. Stay tuned.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
President Biden reassuring allies that America is committed to NATO. He did so as part of his trip to Europe, telling Poland's president that the U.S. treated its duty to defend NATO allies as a sacred obligation. President Biden delivered a speech from Poland on the need for the world to remain united in confronting Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Prior to the speech, the president met Ukrainian refugees in Warsaw. North Korea still has the attention of the United States, which has called for tougher sanctions after Pyongyang test-fired its biggest intercontinental ballistic missile to date. Kim Jong-un vowed to expand his country's, quote, nuclear war deterrent while preparing for what it called a long-standing confrontation with the United States. At a UN Security Council meeting Friday, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said the U.S. would propose a resolution to update and strengthen sanctions. No further details were disclosed. This is USA Radio News.
Water. It's essential to life, but it's also something that so many of us here in America take for granted. Imagine how different your life would be without access to clean water in your home. What if you had to walk to the nearest creek, stream, lake, or pond to get water? Suddenly, going to work and school wouldn't be an option because you and your children would have to spend your days collecting water. This is the day-to-day reality of most families living in the world's poorest countries. But what if I told you that you can change that reality for just pennies a day? Through our water projects, Food for the Poor is working to meet the need for water in 17 impoverished countries. But it won't happen without you. Incredibly, it only takes $15 to provide a child access to clean water for life. $15. Decades and decades of access to water for a child. Give the life-changing gift of water now. Just text USA Radio to 91999. Text USA Radio, all one word, to 91999.
A teenager who died on an amusement ride in Florida late Thursday is being remembered. 14-year-old Tyree Sampson fell to his death on the Orlando Free Fall at Icon Park. John Mina is the Orange County Sheriff.
Tyree was here with a friend's family from the state of Missouri. So, you know, again, we can't imagine what they're going through.
The ride had only been in operation for a few months, passing inspection in December. The Florida Agriculture and Consumer Services Department is investigating. The Assembly of First Nations in Canada is expecting nothing less than a public apology from the Vatican. This after last year's discovery in British Columbia of about 200 unmarked and previously undocumented graves of children at what was Canada's largest Indigenous residential school.
A meeting between the First Nations and Vatican is set for next week. More than 150,000 indigenous children were forced to attend government-funded Christian schools through the 1970s. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Back now this late March evening with the star that always shines for our audience and for our people, wherever they may be, Nick Griffin. I actually retweeted something this week from the Russian embassy. All of this fake outrage about the so-called atrocities committed by Russia, and I do say so-called and I mean it, the Russian embassy tweeted a photo of George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama standing together because, of course, they're all friends and they're all working for the same team. They're not in opposition. They don't belong to different parties or anything like that. Not really.
Members of the managerial oligarchy.
And the Russian embassy above that picture captioned 10 wars, 6 million deaths, zero sanctions. And that goes back to what Nick was mentioning before at the Balkans, that what they did in Serbia was just one of many. But, of course, the powers that be never allow themselves to be tripped up by hypocrisy or double standards. Do they, Nick?
They don't. And, I mean, the Balkan War now is, what, 20 years ago, 23 years ago. But I think that certainly the non-white world must be looking at this and being repulsed by the hypocrisy of the Western elites squealing as they are about what's going on in Ukraine, when for the last year, the last three, four years, they haven't just been ignoring, but they've been arming and equipping the Saudis' genuinely genocidal war in Yemen. And there's hundreds of thousands of children have been starved to death there by, not sanctions, but by a Saudi blockade, and hundreds of thousands more have been blown apart or incinerated alive by American, British and French weapons used by the Saudis. But, of course, none of that is mentioned. And that may fool...
Well, who controls the media? That tells
Well,
you
indeed so. Well, right. We know who controls the media. Yeah, that may fool the stupid sheeple in the West. You bet your life that doesn't fool anybody at all in the Third World who are thereby pushed and pulled closer to Russia and China.
Well, the approach reminds me of a schoolyard taunt we used to have. It said, "I'm rubber and you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks on you."
Yeah, there you go. Hey, Nick. All right, let's. Your commentary on Russia and Ukraine has been prescient. With this being our march around the world, I would be doing our audience a disservice if we didn't check the pulse of the UK. But first, let me ask you this. So we have, over the course of this month, we have talked with leaders and leading commentators in Germany, Scotland, Australia, Croatia, England, South Africa, Russia, as we mentioned in the last hour, in Sweden as well. And it seems to me that based upon our tour this month, that the one section of the white world that has the greatest sense of health, racial health or physical health or spiritual health, would be the Balkans. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think it would. Yeah, absolutely so. And certainly there have been massive demonstrations in Serbia over the last couple of weeks against NATO and for Russia. And I think they're beginning to shape up to take back Kosovo. So things are changing there. And then if you look, obviously the Balkans is a byword for division. But likewise, if you spend time talking with Croatians, you know, they and the Serbs have a terrible sad history, but the Croatians are also 100 times healthier, for example, than the Italians just across the Adriatic. The Balkans are a place where our people, white Christian Europeans, have been on the front line against waves of Islamist aggression and oppression for many centuries, and they're selected as survivors for toughness and people who understand what's really going on. They're very healthy indeed compared with the West.
Just like that great Serbian Charles Bronson in all those movies.
Well, Nick, over here, of course, we don't need to go far to tell you how devoid of health we are here in America, at least as so far as our institutions are concerned, yours truly and Keith Alexander notwithstanding, and there are others, and there's a growing percentage of people who are right-thinking here in America. But, of course, we don't have any institutional power. Or the so-called vice president of the United States was asked recently why there was a conflict in Eastern Europe, and she said it was because Russia was bigger and they wanted to bully Ukraine, and that was the beginning and the end of the assessment.
That's our genius-level vice president that said that.
And yes. Then this week, of course, the newly minted she's not an appointee. What is she? A candidate for the Supreme Court, a nominee for the Supreme Court.
Ketanji Brown.
She was asked, how would you define a woman? And she said she couldn't define what a woman was because she wasn't a biologist. So that's how things are going in the United States.
Well, I tell you what, marriage must have been tough for her to cope with.
But, Nick, in the U.K., I know things aren't going much better there than they are here. But of the four nations that make up the United Kingdom, Scotland, Wales, England, and Northern Ireland, is there any sense of an awakening for our people in any of those four nations?
Well, I was struck when you talked about, you know, finger on the pulse, sort of what's the pulse like in Britain. So I can say that Britain still has a pulse, but is unfortunately brain dead. So, no, there's not.
Don't need to pull the plug, do we?
The worst of them in many ways is the Scottish government. The so-called Scottish National Party is a crazed woke neo-Marxist joke of a government, but still the Scots put up with it. The Welsh aren't much behind that. The English have got obviously a war criminal government and a would-be war criminal opposition. And just like your Supreme Court nominee, the leader of the Labour Party, that's the official opposition, Keir Starmer, was recently refused to define what a woman was. Because obviously he knows that his would-be working-class voter base, or the voter base they try to rely on, thinks all this is mad and they know exactly what a woman is. But of course, his party support base is now overwhelmed by LGBTQP plus mania, so they wouldn't accept him saying that, you know, a woman is a biological thing and that's it. So you've got the leader of the opposition saying he simply can't say what a woman is because anything with two legs and no feathers can choose to be a woman. So that's where we are.
Well, Nick, that's exactly what's happening. I think that the gender and sexual perversion normalization that they're pushing is a bridge too far. I just think that this is where they're going to lose it.
Yeah, I think our ancestors would have said that in the 1950s with the so-called civil rights legislation.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's always the next bridge. There's always a bridge to come. I hope you're right, Keith, of course. But, yes, I mean, you look at these things, Nick, and I hate to hear it. I mean, I'm glad to hear it. And our mutual friend, yours more than mine, but he's always such a great guest, and I've really enjoyed the chance to get to know him better. But Brother Jim Dowson was the first guest to kick off our series this month, and he was saying on that first show of the month that how the Balkans were so healthy, and he was alluding to some of this going on in Great Britain or the United Kingdom, if you will. And it's a shame because you look at all of the heroes of our race who have come from these places, the windswept isles of Northern Europe, and even here in America, our heroes. And what happened to the nations that used to produce people like that? I mean, certainly the DNA is still there.
Well, Jewish power and influence.
Well, but
to them.
The DNA is still there, Nick. I mean, do you have any hope that it will ever awaken?
I have hope that it will awaken on the other side of the catastrophe that is now unavoidable. You know, great pain is a great teacher. So I think that all will come right in the end, God willing, at some stage. We may not see it, but if we have enough children and grandchildren, then some of them will. As for, you know, is the LGBTQ thing plus the final bridge too far? Perhaps, but equally, of course, it's quite deliberate, this, and it goes back the Soviets use the same system, and the people now running the show in the West are essentially just ideological and spiritual descendants of the Soviet Bolsheviks. And the whole idea, if you get people, if you force the public to agree with something which is relatively sensible, then you're not really dominating them. You're not really forcing them to obey your every whim. The more ridiculous the demands that you put on people, the more they're corrupted by their assent. So, therefore, well,
it didn't work, though. The Soviet Union fell.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it could fall. Where it will fall, will it come from our people? Well, the only people who've got any actual fighting guts in Britain, in the British Isles, are the Ulster Loyalists, Jim's people. Unfortunately, although they're very bold and they're very brave, and they've been pushed into a corner now, and they're very close to fighting to retain their bit of identity, but they are politically so they're even more stupid than the English politically. And Jim would agree with this, that because the Republicans are supporting Russia, they say they had to support Ukraine. That's how reactionary and dull those people are.
Hold on right there. We'll be right back with Nick Griffin, the one and only Nick Griffin.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Always thankful for the opportunity to talk to my friend Nick Griffin, and for all he's done for us on this program and for our people. And I've known Nick now for almost 20 years. It goes back that long when we first met, just shy of 20 years, in fact. But he is making more regular appearances on this show. And
what we can always depend on him for, as we say, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. Nick goes right to the juggler every time.
Well, it's true. It's true. And we were talking about Jim Dowson just a moment ago in the last segment, and he was on, again, as I say, the first week of this month as we kicked off this series. We're closing it now with Nick. We got one more guest in Canada coming all the way back to North America. Remy Tremblay, the French-Canadian journalist, will be with us in the next hour. But it's been a magnificent series. And anyway, Nick, Jim was making mention of the fact that it will be the fundamentalists and the Muslims that inherit the earth, that the woke, when he appeared earlier this month, the woke are not reproducing. The LGBTQIA+.
Even though the woke are meek, they're not going to inherit the earth.
They're not reproducing. And he quoted scripture, which we always appreciate on this program. And he made mention of the fact that we don't have to outnumber them. We don't have to overcome them. We have to. I'm paraphrasing now because I don't have the exact quote. But if you go back, folks, to the archives, you can listen to it for yourselves. But he instilled a lot of hope in me.
Yes.
In so much as that the traditionalists are the ones that are going to endure after it is all said and done, and after whatever collapse occurs, these will be the people left. And it is not our job to take over the world or to fight the world. It is our job to do God's will, and in that our blessing will come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
And, of course, Nick, our first quarter fundraising drive here on TPC runs throughout the month of March, so it ends in a few days, but it has not ended yet. And the incentive gift for our generous contributors is a copy of the book, Deus Vult, The Great Reset Resistance. This is the second in the Deus Vult series. The first book we offered as the incentive back in December of 2020 during our Christmas fundraising drive of 2020. And at that time, it was the most popular and well-received fundraising incentive gift we have ever offered in the history of the program. This is the sequel to that, I guess you could say, and it follows up on a lot of the points that are made. But what I love about this book is that it has so many examples of Christian patriots, Christian warriors. You know, this is another thing that Jim mentioned, to go back to that interview, is that Jesus Christ is not the 1960s hippie that the modern churches here in the degenerate West would portray him to be. There is a more masculine Christianity. This book gives you examples of that. But much more than that, it is, as the promotional material reads, a survival guide for our people during these trying times. And that is, again, the gift we are offering our contributors this month. What more can you say about that book, Nick? Because I know you had a heavy hand in it.
Yeah, it's been very, very well received. We're in a second reprint already, and we're running through that. It's beautifully produced, as you know. But I've read an awful lot of other books, and young nationalists ask me, you know, what book should I read? And actually, I look back at the books that inspired me as a youngster, and they're so dated in some ways now by, you know, the extent to which the madness has gone on and the very perilous position in which our people now stand, that this series of books, they really are for this period. They're for our time and for our future. You know, look, I've got no doubt that our people will endure. Endurance is the key word. And that those who have children and rear them right and have grandchildren, they will be the ones whose progeny inherit not the earth, but are part of the earth. We're going to get it back, because liberalism has managed to get where it is, and it's managed to dominate by dint of it's been the political system which has been associated with an economic system which delivered the goods. And because of they've managed to destroy the ethnic base that made a Western capitalist system work well, they basically destroyed the white working class man, and they're committing suicide by decarbonisation and economic and financial suicide by Russia. So the liberals are giving away their power.
They killed off the people that made it work.
Exactly.
And emasculated them and taken the power away. And without that, they're not going to win.
It's not going to work. So they're demolishing the base which gave them the power to deliver the consumer goods. So we're all going to be poor, but we're not going to be happy. And with all of that, you can say that this system will fail. So our job isn't to overthrow it. As you were saying there, James, what Jim was saying the other day, and what this book hammers home. Our job is not to overthrow, not to confront, not to fight unless we have to. Our job is simply to endure and to rear our kids right. And a key part of that, and the reason that the Orthodox Jews, as well as the fundamentalist Muslims and the fundamentalist Christians, are the future, is that having faith is the key indicator of having large families. So even if someone doesn't think, you know, well, Christianity is not really my cup of tea, even if someone's in that position, They have to understand that Christianity is of fundamental importance to European man, to the white race, because that is our faith, and it's the faith which gives people the confidence and the belief and the blind faith to have lots of children. And that really is what counts. Having children, home-rearing them in the Bible, that's it. If that is all anyone does, that's more than certainly all the LGBTQ plus liberals can manage, and it's what means we are going to win in the end.
Well, Nick, let me say this, too, in response to that. I think it was Napoleon that said, when you find your enemy digging himself into a hole, don't interrupt him. That's what the left is doing now, okay? And we don't need to give them enough rope, they'll hang themselves. The more they show of themselves, the more repugnant they will become to people. They're not the attractive option that they were, let's say, at the end of World War II. And they they're really going down the tubes, and we just need to let them go down the tubes.
Well, this is the thing, Keith and Nick, is that, you know, you go back to 1950s America, and even though in some ways the seeds of our destruction had already been planted, I mean, certainly.
It started right after World War II.
Certainly, but it was still a society you would choose to live in versus that of today. But the point I'm trying to make is this. It wasn't that long ago where you had a society that you would be happy to live in within the lifetime of even my own parents. And by the way, today is my mother's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. I love you. And I had the benefit of being raised by parents who loved me enough to take me to church. So all of this was instilled with me, and I had a wonderful home life. But the point is this. There's nothing worth fighting for if you're fighting for – if you're living for vapid consumerism, if you're living for degeneracy, that there's nothing eternal in that. There is something eternal, and there is something real about fighting for your blood and your soil. And that is why I have hope. I think this very short era, you know, you go back to the 1950s, it looked okay. All right, so we're within the, one lifetime of that. And so it looks very bad now. But I don't think, Nick, that it's sustainable. And these books in this Deus Vult series sort of drive that home. And it reminds us of a better time when we were a more noble people. And if we could be that before, we can be that again. Because what one man can do, another can do. And we ask ourselves, what happened to the nation that used to produce people like that? Well, there's a long answer to that. But the bigger question is, can we be that again? And the answer is yes.
I'm absolutely sure that we can. Just coming back to the Deus Vult book, the second one, especially the Great Reset Resistance, the best praise that I've heard of it, and the thing that really filled me with joy and as well as hope, was hearing that there's a group of homeschoolers who've got quite a network here in Britain, because it's not big, but it's underground. It's a major thing. And this group of homeschoolers have put this book on their own internal curriculum for their 15 and 16 year olds. And I was so touched, moved, and filled with hope. The idea of that book, which we put together, perhaps thinking, well, is this something that only old men who are now past it are going to read and think, oh, I wish I'd read this 50 years ago. But this is being read by 15-year-old and 16-year-old boys and girls who are going to be the men and women of the future. And as long as that's going on, then there is not just hope for our people, there's a guarantee that our people, those who come through the chaos that's ahead, they are going to win, and we are going to take our heritage and our countries back.
And that is the thing you have to remember, ladies and gentlemen, exactly what Nick just said. We don't have to win over the masses. We have to maintain a faithful remnant. And from that, our people can regrow and endure whatever is going to come. And something is going to come, and it's going to be unfortunate. And that is why you need this book, which is much more than just an inspirational book. It is a book that will help guide you through these troubling times with your family. And, Nick, I actually swelled with pride a moment ago when you first opened this segment, because I am a homeschooling family.
My
wife and I, we homeschool our three children at great sacrifice. She's a stay-at-home mom, so she can sacrifice. That's what she wants to do. This is her perfect life, but it is a sacrifice financially. But nevertheless, we are a homeschooling family. We have three children. And this is the way, ladies and gentlemen, and this book is a great resource. So if you received our quarterly fundraising appeal in the mail back in early March, if you have not yet returned a reply, remember that this is the fundraising incentive for those of you who do contribute. And Jim Dowson, who we've been referencing, the great Jim Dowson, and Nick Griffin have made this book available to us at a substantial discount, basically at cost, and we thank them for that. Nick, a final word on the book and a final word from you, my friend. Another fantastic session with you, as they always are. Look forward to the next one already. Final word to you with about a minute remaining.
I would say that if you think back perhaps to 1980 and the state of the Soviet Union then, and if any of us, I was busy fighting communists on the streets, you know, at that age, and if someone had told me then that within 40 years, everything would be switched around, so the Soviet Union would have become a Christian Russia, which had saved the Christian of the Middle East, which was standing up for tradition and Christian values around the world, and was destroying the empire of lies, I would have thought you were mad, and it's happened. That's how things can turn around. They'll turn around for our people as well.
Here, here. I can't think of a better and more inspirational way to end this hour than what you've just said. Nick Griffin, a former member of European Parliament, still a hero of our people. Can't wait to talk to you again soon, my friend. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Keith. Good night to you.
Okay.
Talk to you again very soon. We're going to wrap it all up with Remy Tremblay of Canada next. Stay tuned, everybody.